Working Cows Podcast, Episode 40.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Howdy, everybody. It's Clay Connery, your host of the Working Cows Podcast, back again with another episode for you. We are talking today with Luke Perman. Luke reached out to me, and he's been the source of a bunch of different great guests and some more really exciting guests to come. But Luke reached out to me and said, you know, after hearing your discussion with my dad, I think I could do something as in lines, along the lines of a part two. And so we are here chatting with Luke today, discussing part two, or Luke's perspective of their management succession and how that is working out for him and what he thinks some of the advantages and disadvantages and some of those different things are. So Luke, thank you for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Clay. I'm kind of excited to be, on the podcast, I guess. Kind of feel like it's almost been my own personal podcast because taking suggestions that I sent you for people to interview. So, I've got a lot out of it. So, I'm excited to help out and be part of it this time.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate that list. It's been a really good list, and every guest so far has delivered, and I've got a couple of more that I'm working on, have corresponded with them, just trying to nail down the actual recording. So, been a very, very helpful list, and I really, really appreciate that input. You reached out to me after I did the episode with your dad and said that you'd be interested in doing a part two, kind of with your perspective on the management succession and then the overall succession planning as a whole. So I also appreciate that, and I think that's going to be really neat to have both sides of that, both perspectives on that process. So if you would just share a little bit with us about what that process looks like from your side, and then we'll kind of dive into some of the nitty gritty details.
Sure. Well, I guess this, for your listeners that heard the episode of my dad, kind of have a general idea what our arrangement is at this point. But to kind of recap, I guess when I came back from college in 2006, at that point I owned a few cows, and that were in the herd with my dad, but then he took on a lease with a neighbor, and I took on a lease with a neighbor and started running share cows with him. I guess as time went on, then I started running my dad's cows on share and renting the grass from my mom's dad. And kind of, I guess, just every year it seemed like we shifted a little more of the management and the financial risk, if you want to call it that, and, you know, potential, I guess, over to my wife and I. And that was, there are always strings attached in the form of dad's input, you know, on management decisions. But I think every year for about the first 5 or 6 years, we just made another little tweak, another little change to how the management was done. And over time, that kind of allowed my dad to feel comfortable with my ability to make decisions, kind of knowing the process of, you know, gathering information and evaluating alternatives and that kind of thing. And it was good for me because I learned not only the manager, the decision-making side of it, but the financial side of it as well, and kind of understanding cash flow and financing and all that kind of stuff. So at this point, I guess we've been kind of the same business arrangement for the last year, which is still that I rent all of the grass from my folks. I should say I rent all of their gas, but they have other neighbors. And my herd is growing over time, where I've got about a third of it now. A little less than a third, I guess. And then another, my neighbor that I run share cows with has got about a third. And then my dad's got, my mom and dad got about a third. And so I'm responsible for all the expenses and keeping track of who I owe for what and that sort of thing. And then put the check accordingly when we make sales. We've got some farm ground as well. And I just cash rent that from family and the share crop that the different neighbors got all the equipment that know how to actually grow a crop because I'm definitely not a farmer. I'm a grazer. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at now. And, it's been, when I look back and I think of, I guess, what I've learned over the last 12 or 13 years, I came back and kind of amazing when I think about it, I guess. The decisions that I've made now, or that I can make now by myself that I couldn't do back then without a lot of help and that kind of thing. So, in a nutshell, that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah. And what is that? I guess, what does that mean to you to have more of that responsibility? I mean, it's a lot of trust from your dad. You know, how does that make you feel, I guess?
I guess it makes me feel good. Like, as though he trusts me with some of those decisions. For example, today we're turning bulls out, and we've got kind of a terminal cross with some of our bulls, and then we've got other bulls that are used to sire our replacement females, and you know, I was able to make a decision on which bulls are going to go where, and I called Dad this morning and said, you know, here's my plan, and here's why I think this is the best way to do it, and you know, just want to make sure you're okay with that. He said, yep, that sounds good. I was all on board with it. In the past, that would have been something that we would have talked about together before we ever. You know, before turnout day for sure, and it would have been, you know, a process where he would have been involved from the get-go, and in this case, it was me making the decision and just kind of validating it with him. And I think he likes that because, you know, it's just a little less for him to worry about. He's kind of enjoying his semi-retirement and not having to strategize and think about all those things. I think he's very much okay with that. It's fun. I enjoy that part of it. I enjoy the strategic planning side of running a ranch. And, And I also appreciate that if I am having trouble making a decision, that he's still going to be there to, you know, give me his input. And, it's working pretty well at this point. And not to say there's not times where he questions what I'm doing and I get offended or something, or I get frustrated because he's questioning my decision or my plans, but that's good that it is that way. But otherwise, if he just nods his head to everything I do, then that's not good either. You gotta be able to, you know, have constructive criticism if you're gonna really make good decisions. So, I think he provides that real well, and it makes me a better manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about that kind of the decision-making process that you guys are going through. How has that changed over the last 12 years or so? I guess one thing I need to clear up before we move on is we're recording this on near the end of July, about two-thirds of the way through July 2018. Also, if you wanted to check out Lyle's episode, Luke's dad's episode, it is workingcows.net/37. So if you wanted to go back and check that out, if you missed that, it's workingcows.net/37. This is going to be workingcows.net/40. So any resources or links that we mention later on in the episode will get put up there. But you could catch up with this discussion at workingcows.net/37. So, what is that decision-making process? How's that changed over the years? You've slowly made more decisions, kind of every few years you tweak that, or every year?
Yeah, I mean, I guess an example would be bull selection. When I got started, or when I came back, Dad was still very involved with, fire selection and purchasing. Ever since I was a kid, I was, he'd have me look at the sales catalogs and help me, or he'd, have me help pick out bulls, but, he was always the one making that final decision as to which ones and how much to spend, that sort of thing. And then, I suppose after I'd been back for a couple of years, then he quit buying the bulls and said, all right, now you get to pick them out. And, as our bull battery turns over, you'll be responsible for selecting, the new bulls and paying for them. And, I guess at that point, then I was leasing his bull, that he had already owned. And so we did that for a while. And then, as I started to want to make some different, go a different direction with some genetics, some, breeding plans, I still ran it by him, wanting to get his input on, making some terminal matings and then the different marketing that would come with that. So he was good about asking questions and challenging, my reasons, ultimately, I was able to convince him that this was a good decision, and so that's one example of how we've done it. And there's other things that are the same way, maybe our hay operation. In the past, he would have pretty well set the schedule on which hay fields we're going to cut when, and who's going to do what. And over time, that's been reversed to the point now where, I'm deciding what hay fields we're going to cut or if we're going to graze them. And, most of the labor is up to me at this point anyways. But if he's got time and wants to help, which he does quite a bit. I mean, I know in his interview, he said he works for free. he does do that, for the most part. He works a lot. He deserves to get more of a paycheck than probably whatever he thinks he gets. But, he does help out quite a bit. But it's more, now instead of him telling me, well, I'm going to go do this or that, he always asks me, well, what do you need help with? What should I be doing today? And if it's bailing hay, then he's willing to go do that. Or if it's, building fence, we'll do that. So, like I said, he's turned most of the management decisions, even day-to-day stuff, over to me. As well as the bigger strategic planning type of thing. But we talk pretty much every day on the phone, going through stuff. So communication, like you said, has been really important.
Is there a position or a place for formal sit downs with, all the affected parties, or how does that work out for you guys?
Yeah, we try to do that on a regular basis. Our goal has always been once a month, which pretty much never happens. It's hard to get everybody's schedules in line. Once a quarter is pretty typical, I would say. And that would include, those meetings would include my wife and I, and then my mom and dad. And, if we've got a summer intern or some hired help around, a lot of times they'll join us, for that if it's appropriate. And that's looking at, like I said, those strategic planning things, going over our calendars, making sure we're all on the same page for what is going to be done when. And then maybe there's some new ideas, that I've had for enterprises or just things that would affect other people in the family. Then we have those discussions at that time. And we always review our mission and our vision statement, just to kind of make sure we got everything in the right perspective and we don't get too bogged down in details, but we kind of keep in mind what we're really trying to accomplish. Those discussions happen. Once a quarter, for sure. And then as things come up, we'll get together and we'll visit about other times as well.
What has been the biggest advantage for you as you see it with this management succession, program or process that you guys are working through?
Well, I think, the biggest advantage I would say is just kind of the managed risk side of it. I'll explain that a little bit. I think a lot of times in agriculture, or ranching or farming, we've kind of got this paradigm that the way that you started is go to the bank, get a big loan, buy your cattle, buy some land or rent it or whatever, but you owning it by yourself or renting it by yourself, without anybody else kind of as a partner other than the bank. Like, that's kind of our model of how you think it ought to be done. I just don't think that that's probably the best way in a lot of cases. At least in my case, it wouldn't have been. By doing it the way we've done it, I guess, whether it was my dad or even working with the neighbor, it was a great opportunity for me to work my way into the cattle business without having to incur a whole bunch of debt and not expose myself to so much market risk and not have to make all the decisions by myself. If I have questions about, you know, anything that relates to the cattle that we have or the land that I'm running on, I have access to my dad or the neighbor that, you know, they know this, they know the property, they know, they just have a wealth of knowledge that I wouldn't have if I was just, if I just went out and bought a piece of ground or cash leased it from somebody that didn't know that much about it or wasn't accessible to me to get information from. So I think that's probably the biggest advantage. And, you know, as a result, I've been able to grow my herd without having, like I said, without having to incur a bunch of debt. And, I guess that's what I'd say.
You mentioned earlier sharecropping some of the farm ground and running cows on shares with a neighbor and with your dad. What's the economics of making that work? You know, because I know that a lot of people operate on very tight to no margin at all in the beef industry. And so to think about splitting the profit another way is kind of out of the question in a lot of scenarios.
Well, I guess I sure try to be profitable regardless of who's owning the land or the cattle. I kind of feel like if we weren't both making money, then one of us is going to kind of quit on the deal. So I guess maybe another way to look at it is we're separating a few different enterprises. We're separating the land from the cattle. So both my dad and the neighbor, I'm leasing their grass. So they're setting the rental rate based on what's, you know, works for them. I would say I don't have the highest priced grass in the county. They both give me reasonable prices on the grass. Of course, I do take care of it, and they know that it's going to be in better shape when I'm done than maybe if they leased it to other folks. And, you know, I do my best to take care of the fences and just, you know, like I said, make sure that things are taken care of well. And then on the cattle side, I can't say I've sat down to calculate their profit that they're getting as the owners of the cattle. But I sure try to treat them fairly, based on what our share agreements are. And, you know, everybody agrees on what the terms are, I guess. I do watch my costs very closely. Try to have a low cost cow herd and, a low cost operation.
What are some of the things you're doing to watch costs? How are you keeping an eye on that?
You know, I guess that, the feed cost is the biggest one, though. Winter feed, but then even my protein sources that I'm using in the wintertime, I always look and see what's available, what the cost for nutrients is. Really try to stay low cost on that.
Anything else you want to say about the leasing of those different things? Because I think that is a big part of it. You know, the upfront, especially. You know, you talked about not having to start out with a bunch of debt and those things. That lease piece seems to be a pretty big part of this whole equation to me.
Yeah, I think it is. And I guess maybe the important part to make that work is just really being in communication with your business partners, whether they're people you're running cows for or people who scratch or anything, and just making sure that they're happy and that, you know, you get to have face-to-face time with them to go out with the cattle, and answering questions they have, and then listen to what they have to say. Because I think that's probably maybe some of the mistakes I made earlier on, especially working with my dad. You know, maybe being too quick to speak and not listening, and you know, respecting his experience and his, at that point, you know, his ownership of most of the stuff. I mean, some of the ownership stuff hasn't changed so much, but, you know, at that point I didn't really have a lot of authority or reason to have authority to make decisions and to say what I thought about how we ought to be doing things. And that's probably a mistake most young people make coming back to family operation or whatever, thinking we know more than what we really do. And, we got to pay our dues before we start saying what would need to change. You know? And that'll come. It comes in time, but we got to be a little patient with that. I'm sure I wasn't as patient as I should have been.
Sure. I was recently on the phone with Dallas Mount. He sent me a picture of him listening to the podcast in his plane flying to an EL meeting for ranching or for ranch management consultants. He was doing an EL meeting. And so I called him to thank him for that. And we got to talking a little bit about the most recent class of students in the High Plains Ranch Practicum, of which I am an alumni. And I asked him what about the age of the class, because one of the things that surprised my wife and I was that we were the second youngest couple in there. I just turned 34, so that kind of gives you an idea of our age. And so we thought it would be younger people, but it was mostly older. And Dallas said, you know, that the class this year was actually even older on average than the class that we were a part of. And I asked him, well, what do you think about that? And his answer surprised me. He said, I was happy about it because the younger crowd tends to have a little bit more of a Pollyanna view of things. And when they, you know, they hear a new idea, they're just like, well, if these old people get out of our way, we could get this stuff rolling and we could do it. You know, and that's what I said to him. I said, you know, when I was there, and I'm still susceptible to those things, every problem facing our operation could be fixed with some poly wire and some step-in posts, but that's not, you know, that's not necessarily the truth. It's just you get excited about something and you think it's the fix-all. And so I appreciate what you said there about earning the right to speak and to be heard.
Yeah, well, and there's been plenty of times where I had the latest, greatest idea on how we were gonna, you know, really make great leaps in the operation. Dad would just crush it with one question that I hadn't thought about. And I was like, oh yeah, that's not gonna work at all. but rather than, I think at first, rather than taking his constructive criticism and legitimate questions with humility, it would kind of make me mad, like, oh, I know what I'm talking about. I read about it, or you know, I read an article about it. That makes me an expert, you know. I'm sure he just rolls his eyes at me. Yeah, I know he still does with some of my crazy ideas. I think that you're spot on. We come back with a fresh set of ideas, or go to a conference, or come back to school. You got the magic bullet to listen. And sometimes those are changes that should be made or can be positive. But you gotta approach it with a pretty good dose of humility and make sure you consider all the aspects that maybe the older generation had went through and it didn't work or whatever.
I don't want to keep you too long. I do follow you on Twitter, and I see that you're involved, and I know we have some mutual friends. I see that you're involved in a lot of different things, whether it's the Beef SD program or you know, you've recently attended the Grass Fed Exchange. I know you've told me that you went through Ranching for Profit at least once. What role have those things played in your management ability, your management succession strategy, some of those things?
Well, I'm grateful that my dad is one that is very active in going to those kind of events, and he was the one that encouraged me to enroll in the BFSD program. My wife and I were in the first class actually for that program. Right now they're on their third and starting the fourth. So that was his idea. Him and my mom have always been really good about continuing to learn about the ranch business, I gotta say that it's because I've had good influence that way and encouraging you to go to stuff. But I mean, just that constant exposure to new ideas, some of which will work here and some of which will not. But until you get exposed to them and you kind of get in the habit of learning how to evaluate those things and think them through and decide, is it something that we would want to do? Would it work? Why wouldn't it? I think until you really kind of go to some of those events and see what's going on behind your ranch gate, it really limits you on your creative ability. Otherwise, you're all on your own trying to come up with new ideas. And so I think all those different things have really been important in my development of how I see our ranch and the ranch industry in general. I'd highly encourage people to get out, be stretched a little bit. Don't go to stuff that you think you'll agree with everything you say. You know, we'll hear somebody that, you know, is going to talk about something that you might disagree with, and you get another opinion or an outside perspective on it. That's how you learn.
Yeah, Brock Terrell said, I've never learned anything from anybody I agreed with.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Have those opportunities afforded you a network of people who are kind of in a similar situation with you as far as transition, and how has that been valuable?
Yeah, to some degree. The VFSU program in particular, because that's, you know, kind of aimed at producers that are 35 and under. Yeah, it's important to build that network, because not only is it, I mean, it's a knowledge network that you got a question about something, you're going to be like, oh, I remember so-and-so. He was running sheep with his cows, or he was doing bale grazing, or, you know, he was using AI and synchronizing his cows. So you have this network of people beyond just your neighborhood that you can learn from, but it's also kind of also a potential business opportunity. I was able to enter some cows for a friend that I met through that program. That helped him out, helped me out. And there's been other instances like that too, where and some mutual acquaintance that I met through those deals. Well, one of the guys that I buy bulls from, I met through a conference that I went to. So yeah, it's really important to expand your network.
Very good. How can people keep up with you, Luke, if they want to follow you, see what's going on around the ranch?
Well, I guess I do some stuff on Twitter, not a great deal, but whenever I have a wild hair or some burning issue that I feel like my wife is tired of hearing about, they put something on there. And we have a website, rockhillranch.com, kind of trying to put some stuff on there every once in a while, what we're doing and what our interns are up to, I guess, to try to have them do some of the stuff on there.
Sure.
I guess we have a Facebook page that's not terribly active, but yeah, the website and my Twitter are two things to check out.
Yeah, and that's at Rock Hills Ranch, and it is, he does come up with some thought-provoking questions on there, so appreciate that.
I'm either on something or on something. Sometimes I'm not sure.
Sure. Well, Twitter will let you know one way or the other, I'm sure. Luke, I appreciate your time today. Any other resources that you want to see at workingcows.net/40?
You know, everything that you put on, I've listened to and enjoyed, and just listen to all the other episodes.
I probably won't link to every other episode, but if there's an episode number between 0 and 40, it's going to be workingcows.net/that number, so go ahead. I endorse Luke's recommendation to listen to the entire backlog of episodes.
it's a great service you're providing, and I hope that you don't lose any listeners by having me on there.
No, it's great. I really appreciate it, and thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
After we had chatted, Luke did reach out to me again, and he wanted me to let you know that he thought another great resource, and I totally agree, is a personality profile of some kind. You know, there's Myers-Briggs, there's all kinds of different ones. I'll put a link in the show notes page, workingcows.net/40, to some of the different ones that I have been exposed to. And really just some of those personality type profiles can be so helpful when it comes to dealing with different types of personalities in your ranch business. And so I would encourage you to check those out. at the show notes page, workingcows.net/40. Got some really exciting developments coming. I know I've said that a few times. I had a meltdown with my phone and lost some of the files that I was working on. So got some really exciting developments coming, though, and some really exciting guests that have responded via email or phone message and said that they were ready to record an episode. So I'm really excited about that. So just keep your eyes and ears tuned here to this feed for the Working Cows podcast and upcoming episodes. And we'll see you again real soon. On average, still keeping up that average of weekly episodes. So we'll see you soon with another episode of the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.